I think every team realistically would be speaking about it. I've always said that unless I felt drunk about an All-Ireland, I wouldn't play because the sacrifices are just too high.
OTB AM, live weekday mornings from 7:30 on the OTB Sports app.
Hello there, you're welcome along. So it's Tuesday's Off the Ball. Joe Malloy with you this evening. Really good show on the way. Andy Mitten will join us on the football show on the back of Ronaldo's third goal now in two games for Manchester United. They're 1-0 up as things stand with an hour on the clock against Young Boys over in Switzerland in one of the early Champions League games. So Andy's going to join us at 9 o'clock at full time. Former Premier League referee Dermot Gallagher as well on what he's making of the league's newfound leniency in light of the Harvey Elliott injury, which should be an interesting chat. And then plenty of rugby for you as well this evening. Been a bad few days for women's rugby in this country. There was the Energia Park controversy on Saturday. And now, World Cup qualifications taking a huge blow after last night's loss to Spain. Neve Briggs, Fiona Coughlan, Alison Miller, all in a panel with us from 7:30. They weren't impressed with the performance against Spain last night, to say the least. And we'll give you some Paul O'Connell as well. Paul O'Connell on OTBAM this morning. So we'll bring you some of his chat with the lads. 53106, the text number. We are at Off the Ball on Twitter. Richie McCormick, hello. We'll go again. Richie McCormick, hello.
Howdy, Joe. You well?
I'm very well. Hell of a delay there. Did you hear me the first time? Oh, it's a big delay. Dave McIntyre, please God, don't let there be a delay on your line. Hello.
No, please let there not be, Joe. Otherwise, it's just you and me. How are you?
Yeah, very well. Very well, very well. Dave, the impact of Ronaldo continues. So another goal this evening.
Yes.
Beautiful pass by Bruno Fernandes. That's not even scratching the surface, Dave. Let me bring you Lee Grant, Manchester United goalkeeper. He was talking yesterday in advance of this game about the impact Ronaldo was having on the squad. So Lee Grant here. Haven't seen Lee Grant play too many games, but he seems like nice fella, interesting fella, bit of fun. So he says, to give you one instance of the impact Ronaldo's having on the group, he says, this was Friday night in the hotel. You finish your dinner and usually you've got some cheat stuff out. You've got some apple crumble and custard, or you've got a bit of brownie and ice cream. I'll tell you now, not one player touched the crumble and custard. Not one player went up for that brownie. One of the lads said to me, what's Cristiano got in his plate? We were having a little goosey gander at what he's got, and obviously it's the cleanest, most healthy plate you can imagine. It just cracked me up. Not one single player dared get up and have the junk food in front of Ronaldo. I'll tell you one of his plates. This is one of Ronaldo's plates. He had several. One of them was quinoa, avocado and a couple of boiled eggs. So there you go, Dave. The impact of Cristiano Ronaldo, it knows no bounds.
No, I get there was a lot of talk that this is the sort of influence he would bring to the squad, isn't it? And that he'd be a huge help to younger strikers, the likes of Rashford and Jadon Sancho and Mason Greenwood in particular. And he hasn't got to the point of his career at his age and at the level he continues to be at by going for that brownie and for that apple crumble and custard every time he has a team meal in the hotel. So, you know, if it's a positive impact outside of what happens between the four corner flags, well, that's great too. I mean, you glossed over the ball from Bruno this evening. My word. It's as good a pass as you will see in the Champions League this week, next week, for several weeks, I would think. But Ronaldo was there in the end of it, which is exactly what he's paid to do at this stage of his career.
Yeah, very tasty pass. By the way, all this was put to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, this Lee Grant anecdote of the players not having desserts. And Solskjaer, I think, could see the headlines in advance and so played it down straight away. So he said, to be fair, that's just a joke. It's not like we're all lined up having junk food and suddenly Cristiano has changed it. So Solskjaer was kind of at pains to point out we're not having brownies every night at the team meeting. But you're right, the Bruno Fernandes ball was delicious, to continue the food theme. It was beautiful. And kind of like they've combined more for Manchester United in two games than I've seen them combine with for Portugal.
Yeah, Bruno just never seems to find his niche in that Portuguese side. There are a lot of world-class players in the team, obviously, but you know, more often than not, Bruno's hauled off after 65, 70, 75 minutes. He never really seems to impact games the way he does at Manchester United. Maybe he's just not as vital a cog in the Portuguese wheel as he is at Old Trafford. I mean, most things go through him, if not Pogba, it's one of the two. But yeah, you're right. It's 70 something we saw over the course of Euro 2020 that Bruno Fernandes was never really in a position where he could show the sort of form for Portugal as he did last season with United. I think a lot of that might be due with the fact that he's absolutely exhausted as well. Hmm. He just hasn't had a break. And I would worry from a Manchester United point of view that he'll get to some similar state of fatigue by the midpoint of this season as well, because he looked very tired at the back end of the Premier League campaign and took that right into the European Championships.
We'll try take two. Richie McCormack, hello.
Joseph, you well?
There we are, loud and clear. How you doing?
Good, good, good. Welcome back.
Thanks. I've spent the day not remembering my login passwords for anything.
Yeah, welcome to the party, pal. That's become a recurring theme over there. When you were talking about the Manchester United diet and the Cristiano Ronaldo diet and all that, I thought that was rather, you know, excessive and, you know, indulgent compared to what McIntyre over there would eat on a daily basis. I've seen that man's munches.
Oh, listen.
And they are scary. They would intimidate anybody.
Protein balls, every kind of fruit and vegetable known to man.
No, that's a myth that's been peddled, and I've been happy enough to non-deny it, allow it fester.
Listen, those biceps don't just happen, Dave McIntyre, but we'll move on.
They're licensed by the NRA.
So I've been away. Oh, Young Boys have equalised, should let you know, 65 minutes on the clock. Just seeing them pull away and celebrate now on the AstroTurf in Switzerland. So Young Boys won, Manchester United won. It is 10-man Manchester United, by the way. Dave, I don't know if you saw it, but Wan-Bissaka sent off for over the top of the ball. Definite red card.
Oh, yeah, there's no debate about it. It's one of those. He wasn't looking to do the guy. He just clumsy touch, which meant he was stretching for the second ball, and his opponent got there first, and he was in just above the ankle, and luckily there was no injury involved, but yeah, it was straight red, I don't think. And in fairness, Wan-Bissaka didn't protest at all. He knew he was in trouble with that clumsy first touch, and unfortunately it got away from him, and the game is looking like it's starting to start getting away from United now. I'm just seeing the goal now. It's a close range topo from there, just outside the edge of the 6-yard box. 25 minutes plus remaining. United are really going to struggle to take something from this game now.
Yeah, ball came in from the right-hand side, made its way through a few bodies, and then Nicholas Niamh-Alou gets a toe to it. It's actually a pretty good finish, in fairness to him. So that's 1-1 in Switzerland, 67 minutes on the clock. You suspect United wouldn't be heartbroken with a point, given the fact they're down to 10 men this evening thus far. Even, Richie, I don't know if you saw it, but even in the days now, and we'll be talking to Dermot Gallagher about this later on, in the days of letting the game flow, that was a definite red card. What have you made of the discussions around the injury to Harvey Elliott and the sense some people have that this was the natural, inevitable conclusion to, you know, the more lenient refereeing we're seeing? Or do you feel like, look, this kind of a tackle would have happened maybe in previous seasons as well?
Yeah, the one by strike on Harvey Elliott, I think, would have happened in previous seasons. Everybody's judgment on it is obviously clouded by Elliott's horrific injury. But we've then seen like this weird competition whereby almost everybody, no matter what generation of footballer they're from, are now saying, oh, well, things are, you know, have gone a bit soft in my day. Like Rio Ferdinand, and I realise his proclivities in terms of Manchester United, but at the break in tonight's game was saying, oh, well, in my day, you would have gotten away with a pat in the back for a challenge like that, the one that we saw from Aaron Wan-Bissaka during the first half of this game, which is absolute nonsense. So we're seeing this really muddying of the waters in terms of what people believe is acceptable, what people don't think is acceptable. Tarkowski's challenge on Richarlison last night was another case in point, which I don't think went punished either, whereby anything that looks vaguely physical or tough or hard or that, you know, you see somebody kind of slide in is viewed as, if it's let go, it's all, it's part of the new rules, where, you know, it mightn't be. It might be just, you know, it's the fair challenge that somebody's won the ball. But it's the fact that this diktat is out there from the referees or from PGMOL or whoever's looking after it, that, you know, things are going to be let flow a little bit more, that managers now feel that if something does go awry, that they do have leeway to push back against referees and say, well, you caused this. I don't think that indication from the refs that they're going to let things flow caused Elliott's injury. I don't think that's the case. I don't think Richarlison would have been red carded or otherwise for his challenge, or sorry, Tarkowski would have been red carded or otherwise for his challenge in Richarlison last night. But what it has done is created this enmity between the managers and the officials, which I don't think needed to be there. And it's given both sides grist to the mill to give out at one another and say that there are problems, when you know, there might necessarily be those problems.
Yeah, I must say I'm really interested to chat to Dermot Gallagher later on and see what he's made of the season thus far, because I thought it's been brilliant. I mean, now the Elliott challenge has probably cast a shadow over it, Dave, but like, I remember, even was it the opening weekend or second opening weekend of the league, and it was Manchester City against Spurs, and Spurs ambushed Man City, and like, one of the more enthralling parts of the game was Tanganga at right back taking on Grealish and Sterling at various points. Now, he's putting in seriously hefty challenges, and I thought, well, in this day and age, he's going to get a yellow card, he's going to get sent off, he's not going to last the game. And in the end, he ended up getting man of the match, and I remember thinking, God, this is a change, and this is, I don't want to see players get injured, obviously, but I did think this was a more enjoyable brand of football. And then there was the United game away to Southampton, where Fernandes collapses on the ground because he feels a bit of contact, and referee waves play on, and I thought that was the right thing to do. Like, that challenge, you know, he kind of got, the Southampton player gets his body in and barges Fernandes a little bit and kind of gains possession of the ball that way. That's the kind of challenge I recognise from watching football 10 years ago, which had gone out of the game. The Elliott injury, like I said, is a shadow and may lead, Dave, ultimately to referees now tightening things up a touch. It's going to be interesting. I don't know what you've made of the opening couple of weeks.
Yeah, I've loved the opening couple of weeks, and it has been a real flow to games. There's been a lot of goals. The away teams are really having a good go as well. It's very much a knee-jerk, modern-day type reaction to the Harvey Elliott challenge. We can list so many of those types of tackles over the last 15 or 20 years that have ended up with the player suffering a really unfortunate, nasty injury. No longer career-threatening as it once might have been, but there was a ball there to be won, and the guy was clumsy, he was a little over the top, and so often those tackles happen and nobody ends up getting hurt. The referee probably doesn't even flash a yellow card. I wasn't even 100% sure it was a red card, to be honest. I think the consequence of the tackle often leads the referee to be influenced as to whether or not it should be a yellow, a red card, or nothing at all. But it's very quick to, you know, go down some sort of a cause and effect road when you see a tackle like that. It would have happened anyway. It would have happened whether or not referees are being asked to be a little more lenient. And we all want the game to flow a little bit more. I don't think there's an awful lot more to say on it than that. I mean, we will see tackles like that happen no matter what. It's a physical game. Players lunge in. Sometimes they're out of control. It's got nothing to do with the fact that maybe some of the lesser fouls are being let go by referees. I think that was a really, and it was a very strange comment from Rio Ferdinand earlier. I really agree with Richie.
Yeah.
He may have got it away back in the day because VAR may not have picked it up had the referee missed it. But it was a tackle for Wan-Bissaka that was above the foot into the ankle joint. Yeah. It's a red card in 2001 as well as 2021. There's no question about it.
It was bizarre, that Ferdinand line. Like, that was a red card in the late 90s, so I don't really know what he was talking about.
That was a red card in the 70s, for God's sake. Yeah. I know the game was tougher back then, but it's just, like, again, I think his closeness to the squad, which obviously is a bit evidenced by who's playing up front tonight, was probably bearing an influence on that. But like, it was a red card all day long, and I don't think anybody can dispute that.
No. Steve says, I remember the stick you guys used to give Dave McIntyre for his protein shakes and chicken fillets. In many ways, says Steve, he was off the balls Ronaldo. Well, indeed.
Still is.
Jerry says, it's amazing the difference a zip makes. Initially, watching tonight on YouTube, I thought Dave was rocking a milk tray man full-on turtleneck, but I see the zip, so now he's more underage football coach. Jerry, I had the same first thought when I saw Dave. I thought this was a luxurious piece of knitwear, but in fact, it's just a more casual zip. So there we are. One other point then, before we get into the news round. I'm sure the lads at length, I didn't catch last night's show, were talking about the All-Ireland final. Dave, there have been times where we've come on and said, oh, Mayo, man, can they play any better and not win? I'm thinking of 2017 in particular. This was not one of those occasions. They played nowhere near well enough to win this All-Ireland final.
No, they didn't deserve to win. And I would wish to put thought into the minds of Mayo supporters and the brethren all over the world. I think this may hurt more than any of those. I mean, at least in those days when they were beaten by a point to Dublin, who we will look back at as the greatest team of all time, they had periods in the game where they were absolutely fantastic and had Dublin on the back foot. After the two goals from McFadden and Murphy in 2012, Mayo, for large parts, were the better team and just couldn't get the goal that really would have poured them back into that final. But they never really put together a period of anything resembling quality at the weekend. I spoke to a former Mayo footballer, I won't say who it was, but in the build-up to the game, and he told me of all the teams that had reached the final from 89 to 20. 21. This was probably the worst Mayo side that had come up to Croke Park looking for a win. But you still expected them to put together a performance that would could be something close to a PB, if you want to borrow an athletics term. And yet, despite that, they had more than enough chances to win the game twice over. If you said to James Horne before throwing, you're going to create five or six gilt-edged goal opportunities today, he'll think, I will take two of those, we'll win the game. So even as bad as they played, the difference between the two teams was that Tyrone took their goal chances and Mayo didn't. You think of Conroy's chance, Loftus' chance, the penalty chance, Walsh's chance. Oh, they'll remember this final for a long, long time as one they should have won, one they left behind them. I'm not trying to talk down Tyrone. They were fantastic. And where they've come from is absolutely incredible. And they fully deserve to be where they are. But they took their chances. They kept their cool, like McKenna did from the McCurry goal. Mayo never kept the cool when they were within 10-12 yards of the Tyrone goal, and that was the difference in the end.
Yeah, we'll start the news round. It is, as ever, with thanks to Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. Richard, starting with Champions League.
Yeah, they're into the final quarter hour in Bern, where it's now Young Boys 1, Manchester United 1. United took the lead through Cristiano Ronaldo this evening on 13 minutes. But as you mentioned there, Joe, Nicola Ingamelio has equalised for Young Boys. 1-1 the score into the final quarter of an hour, and United down to 10 men, courtesy of that red card to Aaron Wan-Bissaka. Chelsea begin their defence of the trophy at 8 at home to Zenit St. Petersburg. Elsewhere in that group, Juventus are away to Malmo, and both of those games have 8 o'clock starts. Barcelona's first Champions League campaign post Lionel Messi begins tonight. And Bayern Munich visit the Camp Nou in Group E. That group's other game sees Dinamo Kiev host Benfica. They're also into the final quarter hour in the first game of the evening in Group G, where it's Sevilla 1, Salzburg 1. There were 4 penalties in the first half alone at the Sanchez-Pizjuan. 2 of them missed by the visitors, Salzburg. Even Rakitic levelled for Sevilla after Sucic had given Salzburg the lead. 1-1 it remains. And at 8, the French champions Lille take on Wolfsburg.
Tonight, of course, would be the debut of Live Score streaming the Champions League. Have they had studios, they did, yeah, by the way? Anyone seen any of it? I haven't got a chance.
I've watched bits of it on, they did the qualifying round as well. And I was watching, was it Benfica, I think, around the qualifying round that night. No, it's just, it's literally like live streams of the games. So when you go into the app, when you have the list of games, there's like a camera notification to the left of the scoreline. And you just click into that, and then there's a screen option opens up and you press play. But it's only on mobiles. So I've only been able to get it on my phone. There's no live score compatible app on the old lappy there. So yeah, it's just been on the mobile. It's been decent. Like, the coverage is your main Champions League cameras. Martin Tyler and Alan Smith were on that Benfica game I was watching, so you know, decent.
Okay, but no studio so far. Basically, I'm saying if there's a job opportunity there for me and not Dave McIntyre. So Liverpool then, Harvey Elliott. We were just talking about Harvey Elliott. Yeah. He's had surgery, I think, today, is it, Rich?
Yeah, he was in London for that surgery on a dislocated ankle. The midfielder suffered that horrific injury in Sunday's 3-0 win away to Leeds. Leeds themselves have lodged an appeal against Pascal Struyck's resultant red card. Meanwhile, AC Milan will be without Zlatan Ibrahimovic for tomorrow night's Champions League game away to Liverpool. The Swedish striker is nursing an Achilles injury. It's the penultimate season of the Champions League in its current format, and Klopp wishes it wasn't changing.
When people, I never understand that when people talk about changes in the Champions League, and it's just not my thing. I like the Champions League how it is. I always said that. And this group obviously shows that there are no games where people think, do we really want to watch that? What could be decided here? This group will be exciting from the first second to the last second. I can't see any kind of early decisions made in this group.
I know, he's right. Enjoy these two Champions League campaigns while we have them, because in 3 years' time it's not going to be as enjoyable, I think it's fairly safe to say. Now, this was an interesting story which emerged from Kerry last night, Richie.
Yeah, outgoing Kerry manager Peter Keane must reapply for his job. The county board chair Timmy Murphy is heading a 5-person subcommittee tasked with deciding who will lead the kingdom in 2022. Keane has come to the end of a 3-year term, and ex-Kerry boss Jack O'Connor and All-Ireland winning captain Seamus Moynihan are among the contenders to potentially replace him. Although, as we mentioned, Keane is still involved in those talks.
What's your read, Dave, on this? Obviously, as Richie says, this is the end of an agreed 3-year term, so there was always going to be a point of reflection, I suppose, at the end of these 3 years. But it did strike a lot of people as ominous enough for Peter Keane that Kerry went public with the fact that they're interviewing applicants.
Yeah, it can be a humiliating experience when a manager's asked to reapply for a job that he's held for 2 or 3 years. I mean, Brian Cody's continually reaching the end of his whatever his agreed term is. It's changed in terms of its duration over the years, but they've never asked him to reapply for his job. Most recent example of it is Declan Bonner up in Donegal. He was asked to do it and he ended up getting it again. Some managers will feel it's beneath them to reapply for a job that they already have. Now, whether Peter Keane actually has any intention of continuing as Kerry manager, he hasn't actually stated that publicly himself either. I wonder if he was swaying one way or the other, that the fact that he has to go through this process might just send him down the direction of deciding, you know what, enough is enough. It also obviously depends on the calibre of guys that are up against him. It's really interesting to see. And you have the potential for a bit of dirty laundry to be aired in public with this Kerry situation over the next few weeks. All is not well down there at the moment.
No. Meanwhile, Brian Cody.
Yeah, the longest serving man in inter-county management is continuing in his job. The Kilkenny County Board last night ratified Cody for a 24th consecutive year. The Cats, though, have gone 6 years without winning the Liam McCarthy under Cody. That was the same amount of time he broke their dry spell in 2000 by lifting the All-Ireland Championship that year.
I would still put it to you, Dave, that it really does feel like Brian Cody has the absolute respect of this team, and he's still getting a tune out of lesser players compared to earlier in his tenure. And also he's evolving. It's not like he's sticking rigidly to the brand of hurling he was playing 10 years ago. I never quite know what the vibe is in Kilkenny. We get the occasional text increasingly over the last couple of years saying they're not so sure about Cody and maybe it's time for somebody new. But like, to my eye, it still looks like Cody's getting a serious tune out of this group.
Yeah, I listen to the guys outside of Kilkenny a lot. They're all of the pundits across the various platforms, and almost to a man, they have been stating with regularity over the last two seasons that he is getting the absolute most out of this squad of players, and that Kilkenny right now, winning provincial championships, league titles, getting to All-Ireland semi-finals and finals, is about their level. And they have run into a Kilkenny-esque side in Limerick, the sort of side that could rival Kilkenny's exploits in the 2000s in particular, the side that won four in a row. And it's unfortunate. Kilkenny probably would have picked up at least one All-Ireland over the last 4 years had they not run into this Limerick side. So I think I would look at what they're saying and bow to their expertise, that Brian Cody is still, you know, fulfilling the potential of this squad at the moment. And let's not forget some of the young forwards in particular that he's managed to bring through over the last 18 months. I think they'll continue to get better. If there's a man in the county that's willing, A, to stand up to him and try and take the job off him, and B, to then go and succeed to a little more than where he has been over the last couple of years, I'd actually be astonished. He's going very well with them at the moment.
There's a text in from Jim in Ballina saying, most disappointing aspect of the game on Saturday was that Mayo weren't even taking on crazy shots. There were just terrible wides. I think that's true as well. Like, they worked a lot of good opportunities. It wasn't as if they lost all composure and started taking on Hail Mary shots. They took shots from a lot of very promising positions and just had, you know, wides which you would associate with the bad old days of kind of Mayo 1990s, when they had a serious reputation for bad wides. That jumped out to me as well, I have to say, Dave.
Yeah, I think it was a mixture of the two. There were a couple of occasions in the last quarter. I mean, at one stage, Darren Cohen picked up the ball on the 45-metre line, and there was about 15, 20 yards of space in front of him. He just seemed to be unaware of what was around him, dallied on the ball for a couple of seconds, the crowd got on his back, and he took on a shot from where he was in the 45 that he'd no hope really of landing, and that went wide. I think that Brian Walsh completely lost his composure when he had the ball on the right side of the penalty area and just thrashed at it and sent it high and wide. That was a complete loss of composure as well. So yeah, there were mixtures of poor execution and really poor decision making, and that goes from goalkeeper through defence and then into the forwards as well, because Rob Henley for the McShane goal made a very bad call as well. So I do think there was a loss of composure in Mayo in that last certainly 12 to 15 minutes in particular. But yeah, our listener has a point. There were some just poor executions of shot taking as well.
Brian Duher on the show last night, by the way, if you fancy a listen back. Rich, a couple of interesting stories. Do you want to rip through the last few?
Yeah, the Gaelic Players Association looks set to back a league-based football championship structure. Reports suggest that a majority of inter-county players are in favour of that change. A special congress is due to be held next month to consider the proposed formats. While speaking of formats and the like, the GAA has asked all players, supporters and members to help shape the next 5 years of the association. They've issued a wide-ranging survey asking for input on a number of issues that need addressing. The questions are based on the work conducted by the GAA's Strategic Plan Steering Group, which is chaired by GAA President Larry McCarthy.
And the latest on the World Cup every 2 years?
Yeah, football's World Players Union will meet with FIFA to discuss its plans to overhaul the international football calendar. FIFPro says that without the agreement of players who bring the game to life on the pitch, any reforms won't have the required legitimacy. Among new FIFA proposals is the idea of holding the World Cup every 2 years. UEFA and CONMEBOL have both spoken out against the idea, while the Asian Football Confederation and CONCACAF remain open to the idea. CAF are somewhere in between.
I think they might get the players on board with this, you know. Gary Neville was talking on his podcast at the weekend, and he was saying that Wenger was privately going around presenting this to people, you know, sort of as a, in complete opposite to the European Super League, which has launched this on the world. Wenger was going around to people and making some proposals. And, you know, Neville was making the point there is a logic to it, there is a sense to it. And he was saying that he hates the September, October, November international breaks for the Premier League. Doesn't think fans like them. One of Wenger's ideas is just to have the World Cup qualifiers in 4 or 5 week period. And when you're thinking of the likes of the Brazilian, South American players going back and forth and having to play games 15 hours after getting off a flight and then trekking back out again next month, the players might go for it. It'll be interesting. We'll do a piece on it in the next couple of days.
What's worth looking into, Joe, sorry, couldn't cross you. One of Wenger's little parts of it, I know we're pressed for time, is that those qualifiers would be condensed, but there's also the idea, much like we would see in the European World Cup qualifier that Ireland are playing in Spain, that they're all played in one location or one area.
Yeah.
So there could be the idea, and that would be a very hard sell to associations in Europe, that you could be deprived of live games, particularly coming out of a pandemic when pretty much all of the associations are strapped for cash. They need gate receipts.
Yeah, that's a great point as well. Yeah, fellas, we're out of time. Apologies, Richie McCormack, thank you.
That's all.
Dave McIntyre, thanks.
Thank you, gents.